Good morning. We're going to say a little bit now about the fourth aliyah of Parshas Truma. Parshas Truma, of course, talks about the binyan of the Mishkan, which is the model for the Beis HaMikdash, and we learn in great detail in this parsha about all of the different components. So together with that, in the fourth aliyah, we learn about the krushim, about the planks that were this crucial structure, crucial part of the structure, these upright boards. And the pasuk tells us that Yasisa krushim mishkan atzei shitim omdim. So first of all, Rashi comments on the Hei HaYadiya here, on the fact that they're highlighted as the krushim, and tells us an interesting history that Yaakov Avinu, he foresaw that there was going to be a need for a Mishkan through Ruach HaKodesh, and therefore he prepared for it in advance by planting trees in Mitzrayim, and those trees came with them to the desert. So those krushim became the product of these trees, and therefore they are identified with this Hei idea as being the very significant result of Yaakov's advanced planning. And we'll come back and say more about that in a minute. But the phrase specifically of Atzei Shitim Omdim, the idea that the wood is standing. So what is that supposed to represent? So the Gemara Masechta Sukkah on Daf Mem Hei Amud Beis has three drushos on this phrase, and they're very different from each other, and we'll explore a little bit if they may be related to each other. But the first one is the one that's most well known, and that is the halacha of Derech Gedilasan, that when you have a mitzvah that involves a plant, although we'll have to get a little bit more specific about when it then does and doesn't apply, it has to be used derech gedilaso, the way in which it grows. The Gemara has the phrase kala mitzvos kulan, but we'll see it's not really all the mitzvos, but it's a reference to the mitzvos in which it's relevant, so we'll explain more about that in a minute. That's one of the three possibilities that the Gemara has in terms of what it means. The other is omdim, that it holds up sipuyan, that it holds up the gold overlay, which is a interesting reference. But the third reference is even more, that you shouldn't say that avat sikuya and avat tikva, and you shouldn't say that since they're not in use anymore, now with the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, that we have lost their hope, they're still omdim. So that's especially a surprising drasha. What exactly is the message there? So it could be there's a link between some of these concepts. The Lahoris Nasan, Rav Nasan Geshetner, has a drasha in his Sefer on Chumash, where he suggests that the reason for Derech Gedilasan here is specifically to evoke these trees that Yaakov planted in Mitzrayim that we just referenced. And that itself is somewhat hard to understand, as he asks, you know, why was this specifically what had to be done in order to prepare for the Mishkan so far down the road? And it happens to be that the Mishkan relies on many Nisim anyway, so why did this have to be planted in advance? And he suggests that this is because he wanted the establishment to be done by people of Shem Shemayim, and also to give hope for what is yet to come. So therefore, Yaakov plants this already in Mitzrayim in order to give the people hope. That language of Tzipuyan, which literally means to be overlaid in the second drasha, see notes could also be read as Tzofer, as that which you are awaiting and looking for, and therefore it has the sense of these boards, so it's very alfi derech hadrush, but these boards are keeping up the hope, and that hope, the third point continues, that hope will continue even when the krushim themselves are not in use. Rav Moshe Feinstein has a comment that he feels the message of derech gedilasa is that you want to show when we're involved in mitzvahs, we're not looking just for the minimal way to get it done, but that we want to keep growing, just like this item would have grown in that direction. And the Meshech Chachma seems to understand that this is not a kpeda by the Aron, which was made out of wood also, but that it's specifically here, even though not everyone agrees. Others, Meryl Diskin and others, disagree with this assumption, but the Meshech Chachma explains his assumption by saying that here It's different because the wood used in the aron becomes butel to the whole rest of it. But here, it stands on its own, and therefore it has its own din. As Naim Torah comments, that you see that the Kreshim were basically like their own kli, as far as the Mishkan is concerned, because the Torah is makbid on their size. And that also probably connects to Yaakov's preparation, as the Sefer Ohel Moshe talks about, that he wanted to plan for this in advance, because Derech Gedulasan would mean that even if there were other Nisim happening in the Mishkan, but this wouldn't be able to be happening through an Ace, it has to happen as it grows. And he adds there also, he wants to show the importance of Amelus. So to focus for a moment on this din of Derech Gedulasan, of the idea that it's specifically, when it comes to mitzvos, they have to be in the way in which they grow, called Derech Amida, so there's a lot to figure out about that. Rashi over here understands that it has to be vertical, has to be going up and down, but it sounds like, therefore, it could also be going upside down, as long as it's not horizontal. However, Rashi, in his commentary to Shas, understands that it has to be standing upright. The Tikkuni, the Bali Tosfos, have a completely different shot. If you say Derech Gedulasan, means essentially that it has to be fresh, it has to be close to its growth. But we generally understand the other way, that it's about how the item is positioned, that it should be standing up straight. So if that's the case, so we apply that to lulav, apparently. But why not other things, particularly other things in the connection of sukkahs? So for example, the Bach raises the question, why don't we see this regarding the schach? That the schach also involves vegetation, why should that have a halacha of Derech Gedulasan? So the Ravid HaZav understood that when it comes to lulav, so we have such a halacha because the lulav is taken in hand, just like the kreshim had to be held up with their hands. But a roof is a whole different thing. A roof by its very nature is going to be horizontal, and therefore it wouldn't make sense to say that the plants used in the schach would have to be vertical. Salvechik had a comment that the nature of this din is that when you have something that has to be a specific kind of plant, so then in order to have that chalos of that plant, in order to have that identity, so then it has to be Derech Gedulasan. But when it comes to something like schach, even if it involves plants, but there's no specific plant that it has to be, it doesn't have to have the chalos of, let's say, a lulav. So therefore, we don't have this halacha. So what about the walls of the sukkah then? So the Torah assumes that there's no such din, but the Bach notes that there are others who disagree, and that could also connect to the previous point, that it's not necessarily the case that the walls are going to be any specific plant, so therefore maybe for that reason it should be pater. When it comes to the esrog, so we assume that this din does apply to the esrog. Rashi in Sukkah leaves it out when he tells us what it applies to, but we do assume that it applies to esrogim, and that has specific nafkaminas for us, both positively and negatively. Positively, because we want to be yotze, the mitzvah of esrog, so we want to hold it the right way. We don't want to hold it upside down. But also, in practice nowadays, we do hold it upside down for a minute, because we want to address the question of brachos over le'asiyasam. That when you make the bracha on the lulav and esrog, so there's a challenge that Rishon dealt with, that you want to make the bracha immediately before performing the mitzvah. But if you're going to be holding the mitzvah in your hand already, all ready to do it, so then you're actually already yotzei the mitzvah, because min haTorah, sukkah doesn't require that we shake the lulav and esrog, it just requires that we pick it up. We say, mida'agbe, nafikbe, as soon as we pick it up, you're yotzei. So therefore, to that extent, we're going to need the space to make the bracha without being yotzei the mitzvah. So Rishonim have different suggestions how to do that, but perhaps the most well-known, what we usually do today, is that we turn the esrog upside down while making the bracha, and then flip it around when we're finished with the bracha, and that's based on this din. Then, since it has to be Derech Gedulasan, since it has to be the way that it grows, so then presumably it has to stay in that direction. So the truth is, some of the Rishonim questioned the whole nature of this Derech Gedulasan application to esrog, because the esrog is heavy, so basically it pulls down the branch so that it ends up hanging in the opposite direction. So some suggest maybe that's why not everyone agreed that it applies to Esrog. But again, in practice, we do apply it to Esrog, and that's the Eitzah that we use in order to allow us to make the bracha over Le'asiyasin while we still have it in our hands. Poskim assume it's also a din by Psamim, because Psamim also uses plants. It should also have a din Batzei Shitim Omdim. There is a fascinating suggestion of the Bikur Yaakov, which was discussed at length in the later sources, because it's fascinating. I don't know how much it really impacted Halacha, but they considered his position, which involved, what if you have an Esrog that came from Australia? It came from down under, so then it means it's going to be growing down and under. It's going to be growing in the opposite direction. So is that a problem to take it in the northern hemisphere and flip it around? Is that Derech Tlasa? That's a fascinating assumption. Now, presumably what we mean is that we look at the species, how it grows, not necessarily just one example and where it grows. So that's a very fascinating scenario, but presumably it didn't necessarily impact Halacha so much. But it was definitely discussed because it's a certainly unusual shita. Hi.
More about the flip side, if you go to Australia with an American. Right.
Yeah, it would be the same question. But either way, it's definitely quite a chiddush to apply.
Maybe I'm going to give her from like right here, the different world pulled sideways.
This is interesting. You can take this all over. You can take it on a world trip. Caleb.
Boom. Asks about this again.
It's the Bikur Yaakov. The Bikur Yaakov was the author of the Aruch Lener and the Binyan Tzion, and he has a sefer on Hilchos Lulav specifically, which is called Bikur Yaakov, and that's where he talks about this.
Cool question.
Yeah, he has many fascinating svarim. He was actually one of the rebbeim of Rav Shamsher Nafal Hirsch, and he had a PhD, if I'm not mistaken. Very fascinating person, and had a lot to say about a lot of things. But this position, I don't think, was really accepted. Again, no pun intended. But it's definitely a fascinating window into some of the details of the sugya. So just to say one more thing about this pasuk, so there's another drasha that the Medrash Rabba has on this language of Atzei Shitim Omdim, that the Tanchuma also has this comment, that just like you see that here, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us how to build his house, and he's telling us to use Atzei Shitim, which are not fruit trees, so too, when you build your house, so you shouldn't use fruit trees. So here, there is an interesting discussion to be had, because this seems to be basically a reference to the notion of Bal Tashchis, that we have a prohibition to waste useful things. And the Torah, when it conveys that in Parshas Shoftim, so it specifically focuses on an Eitz Meichel, on a fruit tree, and a tree that provides that which we can eat. Most of the Rishonim assume that that's a stand-in for anything. It's a way of saying anything useful. There is an Issa Daraisa of destroying it. The Rambam might be an exception, because he writes that you're only Chayiv Malkus for destroying a fruit tree, but presumably there's still a prohibition for other things. But one way or another, there's a focus on this fruit tree, on this Eitz Meichel. So there is a discussion, many assume, like the view of the Rush and the Taz, that even though we're not allowed to destroy useful things, but if it's Litzarecha Adam, if it's going to help people because it's in the way or because we can turn it into something else, so then it's more useful to cut it down, so then we are allowed to. Nonetheless, there's a lot of hesitation about this, and there are a lot of mixed feelings about trees within the observant community, because probably due to the fact that in addition to the prohibition of Bal Tashchis, the Gemara in Bava Kamma tells us that there is a sakana involved in cutting down trees. So that sakana is a discussion how it impacts things. So there are those who are afraid to cut down a tree, even if it is Litzarech Adam, even if there is a heter for it. Others assume that they're connected to each other, and that the sakana is based on the Isser. So if it happens to be Mutter in this case, so then there wouldn't be a Sakana. But nonetheless, there are many who do have the feeling that there's a Sakana even when there is a useful purpose to it. And there are some fascinating shitas. And again, to bring in a reference to Mechiras Chametz and related things, there are those who advocate selling the tree to a non-Jew, because then there won't be a prohibition, and you can have him cut it down. So that's itself a fascinating discussion, and it's also interesting to wonder, does that really help for anything? So the Maharshag has a tshuva where he talks about that, and it's interesting because, let's say, if we consider Mechiras Chametz or other things like that that we've spoken about a little bit this year, so we've recently talked about Tetariska a little bit, and we'll talk more about that in a few minutes for those of you who can join us. So the whole question of what's called a harama. So that phrase, a harama, it sounds like you're getting around something. So sometimes the concern is that you're evading the halachic point, and sometimes the concern is that the process is artificial. So there are those, to give the example of Mecheres Chametz, there are those who are concerned that the sale is fake, and that's what they mean by calling it a harama. And there are those who are concerned that whether or not the sale is real, you are just avoiding the halacha, and that's its own problem. So regarding the sale of the trees, so there was a discussion about this in Poskim. There were those who thought it was a harama, and it was an inappropriate way to deal with this. And the Marshak has a tshuva where he says it's not a harama, because the issue of a harama is when you're selling something and maybe you don't really mean the sale, as we've talked about a little bit over the past week, and maybe you're just expecting to get it back without any belief that it's actually transferring property at all. So the Marshak says, so in this case, that's not a problem because you're legitimately planning on getting rid of this tree, so you're not looking to get it back, so the sale is genuine, so we shouldn't call that a harama. But then he goes on to say, so maybe it's not a harama, but there's another issue here, because you seem to be avoiding what the Torah wants you to do, so maybe that should be a problem. So he's bringing that in as another issue, but that's essentially a part of the concern that we see when it comes to haramas. So what does this reflect? It reflects that there is a belief that there is a sakana involved in cutting down a tree, even if there is a reason to do it. And while others say that it's tied into the Isser, and this is somewhat on some level a machlokas between Niglev and Nister, that Alpi Kabbalah is a little bit more of a concern than one sees in the more conventional halachic sources. But it could be that this pasuk is basically making a point that's related, and saying that, yes, letzarach ha'adam, one could have used fruit trees and cut them down in order to build their house, or all the more so in order to build the Mishkan, but still, if you can avoid it, so that's better, because there should be a recognition of the value of these trees, and therefore a hesitation to cut them down. So perhaps that's what the pasuk is suggesting, that even if it's going to be necessary, and therefore, according to some, permissible, but still, to try to avoid that and keep that to a minimum is certainly ideal. So just to skip around a little bit here in the interest of time, so Pasuk Yudches tells us, V'asisa sakrashim la-mishkan esrim karesh with as negba semana. So you should make these boards for the Mishkan and 20 boards that are going to be on the side. And the Medrash tells us here, on the south side, and the Medrash tells us that Moshe was surprised by this, and he said, how could Hashem fit into such a small place? To which HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, he says, I disagree, this is enough of a space. And Soloveitchik darshaned about this in the sense of tzimtzum. And you see restraint, and the whole Kabbalistic notion that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mitzamtzem himself, that he makes himself smaller, kaviyachol, to be able to fit into this world. So perhaps this is being displayed specifically through this small space. Hi.
So what does it mean? Like, I mean, made the base, like, well, obviously, like, it's weird in the question itself is that Hashem is, like, literally fitting into a space. It, mm-hmm. Has its own question, but I'm going to get more specific. Like, Moshe's like, oh, let's make it 5 feet bigger. It's gonna like, allow Hashem to...
Yes, I think maybe that's also the point, that these are all going to be somewhat symbolic in either sense, whether you call it big or small. So, therefore, it's a hefty timpsa for us to relate to this point that this is about the Kadosh Baruch Hu Simpson. So, speaking of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so in the next pasuk, so we talk about the sockets, which are called Adnei Chesed. And this was a part of what the Machzeh Shekel was collected for. And the Adonim, so that language of Adonim, which here is used to mean sockets, the Shem Yishmuel in a few places quotes his father, the Avnei Nezer, as saying that it's intentional, the overlap with the word referring to God, and it's a way of saying that this is the theme of the Mishkan, the Kabbalas, Ol Malchus Shemayim, and Adnas, and that reflection is essential to what the Mishkan is, so therefore we use that phrasing. So to skip the Pasuk of Dalet, So here it says, here it's talking about how they're tied together. V'yu so'amim v'lamata, v'yachta v'yu so'amim al rosho l'tabas e'achas, ken yu l'shneihem l'shnei hamikzos yu. So here on the top, they're tied together with the ring, and bottom, they are matching but not tied together with the ring. And this is how it should be for the corners where they meet each other. So Rav Schwab has a whole drasha here. If you want to speak at a wedding or a Shabbat brachos, you need something, you can take a look at this pasuk, because he has a whole drasha here for a wedding, essentially, that on the top, so the two sides are joined with this ring that brings them absolutely together, and on the bottom, it's not such an absolute connection. So he suggests that this is a remez to a couple, that when it comes to gashmias, so they need to be compatible, but they don't have to match exactly. But as far as their purpose in life and their hashkafas hachaim, so then they should really share a vision. So therefore, that joining at the top, which represents the mind and the thoughts and the attitudes and the desires, so that should be connected more absolutely. And it's connected through a tabas, so he suggests that that's also why we have the practice of using a tabas for the marriage, using the ring to create kedushin, even though Minhag Torah it's really called kesef, and we have to have a chiddush of shavu kesef kekesef, that which is worth money is also called money. The Beis Yosef understood that this was a drasha that we should utilize in order to emphasize the importance of Torah Shabbat Peh. But here he has another purpose, that to show this kind of connection at the top and this sinking of visions and of life values. So that's what this tabas at the top is supposed to represent. We look at Pasuk Chaf Ches, to skip to there. So there's a bar across the middle. V'abriach ha-tichon b'soch ha-kashrim, mavriach min ha-katzel ha-katzel. So you're going to have this one board across, which is going to go across the kashrim. So there's Na'im L'Torah has a comment here that everything in the Mishkan symbolizes the Jews, and they've been divided with all things, but with their emunah, that brings them together and comes across. We know at Har Sinai there were Bishachar Balevachar, as we spoke about recently. So here too, the Brichim, they're only a part, but the central Briach goes all the way, and he understands there this was also what was planted by Yaakov, who worried about having his descendants be unified and be together. So therefore, that's the message. That's one possibility. There are other theories as to where this comes from. Yonasan ben Uzziel says it was planted by Avram in Be'er Sheva, and that the angels threw it into the Yamsuf and told us to take it with. And the Das Kanim understands that it was the Makel of Yaakov, Kibu Makli, Avarti Yaseir Dein Hazeh, that his staff was what was eventually made into this Briach. So here the Paris Yosef quotes from the Sefer Ol Yaakov that this is a remez to show that Avos Yisrael holds all the Jews together. And as Mishnah says, the Shalom is the Kli Machzik Bracha, is the vessel that upholds blessing, and therefore all of that is perhaps symbolized. And we'll just spend a few minutes talking about the last pasuk, Vakimosa Samishkan Kemishpato Asher Harisa Vahar, and you shall build the Mishkan Kemishpato. So what does that mean, Kemishpato? That it's justice, it's sentence. So how do you understand that? So the Yerushalmi in Maseches Shabbos and Perikei Beis has an interesting comment about this, that the justice that we're talking about for wood represents the idea that all of the planks should be done in the same way, that they should stay in the same plow, same place. The south stays on the south, everything stays where it is. And the Torah Tamima has a comment here that this is to teach us midos for people, that we shouldn't take away from people what they already have, even if it's not something that we understood why they have it in the first place, but we shouldn't take away from them. And we find that represented in other practices. For example, you may not have realized this is connected, but many who have a talis have a practice to put a tara on the talis, which sometimes is decorative, but it has a function here as well, that basically without it, a talis you could put on four different ways, and you wouldn't necessarily realize if you're flipping it, because it could go on either side and go upside down. So the part that goes around the top of the head and that is visible could keep flipping to different parts. So we want to keep it the same. That's a part of this idea. So therefore, the Atara tells us where the talus is generally worn, and that helps us to fulfill this goal of keeping everything in place. So this also has major nafgaminas for Hilchos Shabbos, because we have a malacha called Siva. That's one of the prohibitions on Shabbos. So in case anyone's wondering, it's one of the reasons why we don't text on Shabbos. It's always a question that gets brought up. So separate from the electricity issues, but we can't write. We have a malacha of Siva on Shabbos. And the question is, where does that malacha come from? Because we know that all the malachos had some role in the Mishkan. So one possibility here is that it came from here, it's the Gemara case, that they would use letters in order to be able to match the parts, just like you have a model kit or you have some IKEA furniture that you have to put together. So there are all kinds of indications what goes with what. So here they needed letters in order to be able to connect the parts, and not because they couldn't figure out how to put it together without them, but because that's serving the goal of the Atara here, basically to tell us it should stay in the same position it was previously, and it should be able to maintain that position. That's that idea of Ke Mishpato. So a lot of things you may not have expected if you read this Aliyah on your own, so you may not have thought any of these topics were connected to these Pesukim. So that's a part of what is particularly fascinating about these Parshios. And maybe we'll expand more on this in the coming weeks, but as we have this stretch now from the end of Shmos through the beginning of Vayikra, and a lot of material related to Karbanos and the Mishkan, so there's a lot to say about that. But for now, just to note that the aspect and the role of symbolism is particularly powerful. So that's a part of what we just saw in these past few minutes, and that should help us focus on this Aliyah and on this Kriyas HaTorah, the Shabbos, which is very different than the much more diversified content of some of our previous parshios. But there's a lot to learn, there's a lot to be able to glean and to take to heart, and it should be, all of us should have this chus of being able to properly understand and appreciate and to grow from this crucially important parsha in which the building of God's house is described and is commanded to us for all time. Thank you so much. You should have a wonderful Shabbos. You should be all good things. And yes, I'm heading up to room 570.